good bit by Journey. And in third and fourth places, the two drivers fighting for the national championship, and fighting they are. Mario Andretti in car number one, a Brawner-built car, and A.J. Foyt in car number 14, the Sheraton Thompson Coyote. And what a race they're putting on. In fifth position, in the Tom Friedkin Eagle, number 78, it's sports car driver Jerry Grant. And in sixth place, in car number six, the Rizlone Eagle, it's Bobby Unser. And now Unser gets a run on Grant, try and move into the number five position, and move in he does, going into turn nine. Bobby likes that breaking point on turn nine. He's had an interesting day out here, hasn't he, Roger?
He certainly had. He's been up and down. But after a somewhat shaky start, he's doing a really great job now and moving into contention. Another driver that's doing a great job is Lloyd Ruby in the American Red Ball Special, number 25. He got off to a rather poor start by spinning out, but he's moved back into contention.
Gurney's engine is one of his own design, and he can be quite proud of its performance here. McCluskey's car is using a 4-cam Ford engine and trying to stay behind Gurney. Andretti now in third place in the number one car. Here's Bobby Unser trying for a spot ahead of A.J. Foyt in that same place he likes to do his passing, and he gets by. So Bobby Unser moves past A.J. Foyt, moving him down in that battle for the championship. Unser's an experienced driver, many-time winner of Pike Peak, and drives on the sprint car circuit. Before the race, we had a chance to talk to him.
What about the race today, Bobby? It's going to be an interesting one. What do you think the big problems that our fellows will face will be?
Well, I think the big problem is going to be finishing 300 miles. We just figured up, looks like we're going to be shifting around 1,200 times here, and that can't be too easy on the transmission and on the clutch and all in the car. So I think it'll be very hard on the car. 300 miles on these things is pretty long way, especially when you're shifting.
And tough on the palms of your hands, eh, Roger?
It certainly is. Shifting that many times, a person could get a few blisters.
Whoa! And here's Lloyd Ruby dirt tracking it on the outside of a corner. He could use knobby tires there for a moment. He's really had his foot to the floor in this number 25 American Red Ball Special since that first lap. And what's that? A.J. Foyt! And look at that right rear wheel. Foyt. And here go his championship aspirations. A cloud of dust being a cloud of doom for the Burley Texan seeking his fifth national championship.
And he looked like he's jumped out and running back to the fifth in the hope that he might get in one of those backup cars.
Al Miller wondering whether AJ's going to come over and say something and right past the service truck, and it's a long haul back to the fifth. What a startling development here in this 300-mile race. AJ Foyt looking for a fifth championship out of it, and now Roger McCluskey passes the leader, Dan Gurney. McCluskey's the new leader as Gurney drops to second in action going into turn number nine. Roger McCluskey, who started seventh, is now out in front by the slimmest of margins here. Gurney in second place. McCluskey, the new leader, and we'll be back for more of this exciting national championship Indianapolis car race after this message. Roger McCluskey, car number 12, the new leader of the Rex Mays 300, and Dan Gurney, number 48, a close second. And now A.J. Foyt completes the nearly half-mile run from the crash scene to the pit area. And it's a double disappointment for A.J. For car number four, the Jim Herdebee Eagle is out of the race with mechanical trouble. What's he going to do, Roger?
Well, it's difficult to say, but there ought to be at least three automobiles available to him. Of course, Roger McCluskey and Bobby Unser, Jerry Grant, are all members of the Goodyear team, and I would imagine that he could have any one of those automobiles.
Well, it's almost halfway, and the pit stops will be coming up shortly, so we'll soon see as this race keeps unfolding at high speed. Here's Foyt now talking to one of Jerry Grant's pit crew, and Mario Andretti's crew chief, Clint Brawner, to left, is an interested listener. And now that's Jack Beckley, Roger McCluskey's crew chief, being addressed by Foyt.
And here comes McCluskey into the pit, kind of slow for the leader,
I should think, and we'll see now whether Foyt gets the ride or not. He's the leading driver now, Roger McCluskey, car number 12, and he starts to get out of the car. He had his shoulder harness undone already, and Foyt about to go in. So a dramatic change here in the Rex Mays 300 with A.J. Foyt moving in place of Roger McCluskey and Mario Andretti, the other challenger for the championship, right behind.
This is going to scramble those points again, but it's going to be a very interesting battle from here on, because actually A.J. can only get a percentage of the points won by this automobile.
It's going to take an actuary to figure out the championship battle here. And there goes Foyt on his way back into the race. Andretti, fueled up after his mid-race pit stop, heads for the track, and here are the standings. Dan Gurney, car number 48, the leader.
Bobby Unser in car number 6, second. And in third place is now Jerry Grant in car 78. A.J. Foyt, driving for Roger McCluskey in car number 12, is fourth. And Mario Andretti in car number 1 is fifth. Here's Roger McCluskey now.
Roger, congratulations. A very sporting gesture on your part. How was it out there?
First leg. pretty hardy, Chris.
Figured it could have held on to win if you hadn't turned over to A.J.?
Well, you never know. You know, we're running fast enough to get to the front. So I think Dan must be having some trouble because I don't think I would have caught him otherwise.
Here's A.J. Foyt back in the pit. What's the matter, Roger?
Well, it looks as though the right fuel cap wasn't closed properly and the fuel was probably coming out in his face.
Oh, it's a tough break for A.J. Foyt. He's only getting a percentage of the points this car wins, and this puts him even further back. And it looks like Mario Andretti has the luck here at Riverside today. So now the leader in car number 48, Dan Gurney, and that Gurney Westlake engined Eagle of his own design, setting up brisk pace in this 300-mile contest. An exciting race. In addition to John Prock Clark and Al Miller, others out of the race so far include John Surtees, the Briton, whose Lola went out with magneto trouble, and Lothar Motschenbacher, whose Chevrolet car outqualified all the offies, went out with clutch trouble. And here's Gurney coming to the pits now for his refueling stop. And all eyes are on this pit crew.
Of course, this could make a big difference in whether or not he's able to get out in front of Mario or not, depending on whether he gets a fast pit stop.
Here comes Bobby Unser, about to take the lead, unless Gurney beats him to the track. Unser crosses the line, and Gurney's still in the pit. We have a new leader.
You'll notice car number 12 right in front of him. That additional time that A.J. lost in the pits has cost him a lot of ground.
And here's Gurney, burning rubber, getting back on the racetrack in second position. But remember, Unser hasn't stopped at the pits yet for fueling, and there's no way you can get through 300 miles without stopping for gas. So Dan Gurney, back on the track in car 48, in second position now. Bobby Unser, the new leader of this 300-miler. And here's Unser in the pits now for his turn to fuel up. Judd Phillips and the Rislong pit crew on the Bob Wilkie-owned car doing fine work as usual. Gurney flashes back into the lead, and things are as they were. What an automobile race.
It's certainly been exciting to this point. Now it depends on whether or not Mario can get around to get into second place before Bobby Unser gets out on the racetrack again.
And there's a signal for Mario Andretti. He's down 30 seconds on Dan Gurney. And here's Bobby back to the track. We'll be back with more action from this national championship race after this message. Comes up behind George Balmer, Jim Clark's teammate. Balmer's doing very well since his early race spin out and has gained several positions. Gurney's only averaging 108.33 miles an hour, some 9 miles an hour slower than his qualifying speed. Roger, why is the race that slow?
Well, first of all, of course, I've made a couple of pit stops, which certainly take a lot of time. And then, too, with a full load of fuel, the cars would be running considerably slower than they might be.
Then, too, there's some oil on the track. Whoops, there's Joe Leonard into the turn 6 wall. And the yellow flag comes out. Behind Gurney now is Mario Andretti in car number 1 and Bobby Unser in car number 6. So the first serious accident of the race involves Joe Leonard, a former motorcycle champion. And his Bell Ford Mongoose number 20, a rear-engine Ford, is in sorry shape against the wall there. Gurney slows down. He just put a lap on Lloyd Ruby. And right behind there is Jerry Grant. Well, normally in road racing, the yellow flag prevails only at the point of the accident. But because of the serious nature of this accident and the service vehicles, the yellow flag appears all the way around, meaning no passing at all. So, while the track is being cleared, let's go now back to Vienna, Austria, and Jim McKay.
Well, thanks very much, Jim. Fred Lorenzo and I have just been commenting about the high rate of attrition in tires and in also machinery today. And earlier, before the race got underway, Fred mentioned that that would happen, and it was certainly a true prediction, Fred.
Oh, it's unbelievable down there in the pits, Bill. Gee, the cars are coming in and out, and I've seen the tires, a lot of them blistered, and they're falling off, and it's just unbelievable. Half the cars are already out of the race at this point. And I bet those guys are really getting tired in the pit.
Yeah, we still have a lot of racing to go. Well, we'll bring you up to date on the cars that are out of it, but right now, let's get back to racing.
And we have a pretty good three-car battle for the lead. Bobby Allison in 29, Cale Yarborough in 21, and Leroy Yarborough in 26. And there goes Cale down low. Allison is high, and Leroy right behind. And Allison swinging high. Some pretty good dueling has been going on here. And we have 80 laps to go just inching in front of Allison, and Leroy is right in the draft, right behind both of them. Allison, not giving up here. He takes the high road, and now Cale slides by, and now Allison slows down, and Leroy blows him off. So it's Cale Yarborough in first place, Leroy in second, and Bobby Allison is in third. And the boys must be getting just a little tired on this hot afternoon, Fred.
Oh, they sure are, Bill. Some of them have windows in their cars. In fact, all three of these cars do, and the front car, Cale, is running with his windows up, which are good for another mile and a half, two mile an hour, we found in a tire test here, but it brings the degrees up to about 120 degrees in the car. And the other two cars seem to be running with their windows down, especially the driver's window, just to get that air. So I guess Cale wants to save that speed.
Right, and this is what it looks like doing about 165 miles an hour in one of these $15,000 automobiles. We'll be back with more of the Atlanta 500 in just a moment. As Cale and Leroy battle for the lead here, let's bring you up to date on some of the cars that are out. Paul Goldsmith out with handling problems. David Pearson out. He wrecked. G.C. Spencer had engine failure. Bud Moore is out with a blown engine. Wendell Scott out with low oil pressure. Johnny Sears spun out and wrecked. So we've had a lot of cars leave the race. 18 are running right now of the original 44. And Charlie Glotzback, who's been running hot here in the late stages now, moves into fifth position. And Fred, just look at those tires that have been used up. How much do they cost a piece?
They run running anywhere from $56 to $60 a piece, Bill, and we've used as much as $38 in a day.
Right, Bobby Allison there, and that's Richard Petty right behind him, but he's two laps behind Bobby Allison. And they've been dueling for about the last four or five laps. Uh-oh, Allison hits the wall. He blew a tire right up there in the upper turn, just as Petty started to slide by him.
Boy, he hit awful hard, Bill. It looked like he might have run over something. He was up high, and there is some debris up near the fence.
So the yellow light there blinking once again as Bobby Allison brings it to a stop right up against the upper guard rail, and this is going to be a long caution light, I'm afraid, because they're going to have to get the car off of there with a wrecker. So the caution light is out, and that gives an opportunity to Cale Yarborough to come into the pit, and right behind him is Leroy. So we've seen this scene several times this afternoon where Cale and Leroy have been running one and two, either one or the other in the lead, have come into the pits. This should be, Fred, the last pit stop with only 39 laps to go.
Yes, it should, and there goes Cale out first. Cale got in a little bit earlier than Leroy. There's Leroy out. It doesn't really affect him much under the car. He's right behind Cale anyway. They'll pick him up in the backstretch.
And that was Charlie Glotzback coming in. And here's Donnie Allison. And Cale just slightly ahead of Leroy Yarborough as they move around to the backstretch. And there is the car that caused the problem, Bobby Allison. And let's take a look at that again to see exactly what happened. There you see it, the blown tire. He slammed in, and that gives you an idea, Freddie. You said how hard he went in. I think that closer shot gives you an idea of just how hard he did go into it.
He got in awful hard, and the car went way up in the back. It almost went over the fence.
And there's the car itself, completely ruined, and they'll have to start it all over again. Now let's go down to Chris Economaki.
Sorry to see you here, Bobby. It was a solid hit, wasn't it?
Sure was, Chris.
What happened out there?
I guess I blew a right front tire, and it just turned right straight at the wall. I had my foot all the way in it when it blew, and there just wasn't nothing I could do.
Well, we saw the car hit, and it was a terrible jolt. How about you physically? Are you all right?
I think so. I'll tell you after a while.
Well, good. Better luck next time.
Thank you, Chris.
All right, we're still under the caution as the caution car is out on the track. But the indications are he's going to be coming off here. And he comes off. And it looks as if Leroy may have jumped the gun a little bit. Leroy went ahead of Cale. The green flag is out now. But Freddie, if he passed him under the yellow, that could be trouble for Leroy.
Yes, it's really hard to tell, Bill, because on the backstretch, no matter what position you are, if that green flag falls on the front stretch and that caution light goes out, and even if you are in the back, you can pass. But the big question is, was the green out or wasn't it?
Well, it's a big mystery right now. Johnny Bruner is down below motioning with the black flag. looks like they're going to call Leroy in, which in effect, of course, would penalize him a lap because he'd have to come into the pit area and stop. And although Leroy is in the lead over Cale right now, it apparently is the viewpoint of the officials that he did pass him under the yellow, and that's Junior Johnson, the crew chief of Leroy. And Bruner apparently telling him to signal him in. That's the only thing I can figure out, Fritz.
Yes, that's Leroy, I guess, won't come in because of Johnny Bruner, and he figures Junior's the only one that can bring him in, and they're going to try to bring him in. But as I say, you'll never really know whether the green was out or whether it wasn't out, because they were in the turn, and the lights could have gone to green, and somebody else might not see.
Well, we've got quite a controversy here, as Junior Johnson, obviously disgusted, has to wave his driver, who he thought was in the lead, into the pits. He'll have to come in. It's going to cost him at least a half a lap, if not more. So as they go down the backstretch, undoubtedly Leroy saw the signal, and I'm sure Cale saw it too. And he'd be ready to pounce right here. And now Leroy slowing down, going onto the pit apron, and there goes Cale Yarborough into the lead. And we'll see now just how much of a stop. Usually they just come to a stop and boom, go again.
That's it, yeah, Bill, but it ruins his chances for the day unless he can get the caution.
Well, that's it. The penalty for passing under the yellow, and Leroy is now a good half a lap behind the leader, Cale Yarborough. And now that means that Donnie Allison in car number 27 has moved into the number two spot behind Cale. And there is the sign for Cale indicating that Allison, number 27, is the car behind him in second place at this point. And now just exactly a half a lap behind is Leroy Yarborough. So we'll be back with more of the Atlanta 500 from the Atlanta International Raceway in just a moment. To go, and it's a welcome sign for Cale Yarborough. There's the white flag as he goes by the front grandstand. One lap to go, a mile and a half for Cale Yarborough. And Donnie Allison has slowed up for some reason, and he now has lost second place to Leroy Yarborough. But Leroy is a good 14 seconds behind the leader. So as we follow Cale around, he has less than a half a lap to go here now. Everybody standing in the home straightaway, cheering him on. It's been a great race. And, of course, this would be his second straight win here. Let's bring him home, Freddie.
Yeah, he really looked good all day today. And I think his biggest challenger and near the ending of the race was really mainly Leroy Yarborough. When he had to pit, that's about the end of Leroy's chances.
And there you see the checkered flag going out for Cale Yarborough. And the second place car, this will be Leroy. There he is coming around. That's the distance between the first and the second place car. So it was a big win, much bigger than Daytona, when it was just a fraction of a second in a photo finish. This is by considerably more. So all in all, it was quite a race. And here goes Cale into victory lane. And we'll be going down to Chris Economaki to talk with the winner here today. We understand the pretty Mrs. Yarborough is there too, so perhaps we can get a word with her. Now down to you, Chris.
Oh, Cale, to the victor goes the spoils, eh?
Oh, it was a mighty rough race, Chris. Everything went real well. Everything worked so fine, the tires and this marker really ran well. The Wood Brothers, they did their regular job, a fine one.
Cale, are you out of breath from driving the 500 or from kissing all these beauty queens?
Well, I'm out of breath from both, so both of them a pretty good job.
Miss Yarborough, you must be a happy woman.
I really am. He's done a great job.
What about the frights that are involved? Do you shudder at those when he gets close to another car and so forth?
I was really excited. I get excited more every race, though, every time you get closer to that checkered flag.
Well, Cale, you won here last year, then you went out to win at Daytona, and it's two straight super speedway races for you. What's next?
The next big race is going to be the Rebel 400 Darlington. I sure would like to make it three in a row, Chris.
Well, we wish you well. And now, back to you, Bill.
All right, thanks very much, Chris. And Fred Lorenzen well knows how excited you can get down
the victory. It sure was, Bill. It's something down here today.
I think we ought to say this, that Cale Yarborough really has tabbed himself as the man to beat on the super speedways this year. That's two big ones in a row for him.
It sure is, and he's only got one more to tie the record of three in a row, and I think he'll do it.
Who holds that record?
I hold it from 62 to 4, I guess it is, but he's only got one to go.
All right, and we ought to mention here that he won at Daytona, he won here in Atlanta, and as he said himself, he's going to try to win at Darlington. That's quite a chore for him. Fred, thanks very much for joining us today. We certainly enjoyed your remarks.
Thank you, Bill, very much.
Now let's take a look at the official order of finish.
In first place, Cale Yarborough in a 68 Mercury. In second place, Leroy Yarborough in a 68 Mercury, and Donnie Ellison in a 68 Ford was third. Charlie Glotzback in a 68 Dodge was fourth. Darrell Derringer in a 68 Plymouth was fifth, and Richard Petty in a 68 Plymouth was sixth. And incidentally, Freddie, we'll be looking forward to your comments at Darlington. That'll be an exciting afternoon, too.
It sure will, Bill, because that's the first super speedway that was ever built, and it is an exciting one because going through the third and fourth turn, they have to run single file, and they run the car right up against the fence, and we have speeds there at around 150-mile-an-hour average.
Yakin Red is bumped, then requalifies in a new car. The field is set as each man's story becomes a matter of dejection or happiness. Six o'clock. It's all over for 1967.
Mighty engine. The constant tension and the feeling of being all alone in a world of speed and danger. These are race drivers, dedicated men with a special skill which they've developed over many hazardous years of driving. With precision and smoothness, they search for the shortest way around. And like a soldier under fire, they believe that it's always the other guy who may be killed. Why do these men risk their lives day after day? Some say for glory, others fame, wealth, and of course, the pure love of speed. These daredevils of the speedway are like dope addicts who can't break away. It takes more than speed and courage to be a great race driver. Luck and driving know-how play a large part in winning. In 1911, Ray Haroon felt that tire construction was the key to winning. At 75 miles per hour, tire wear would be held to a minimum, while at 77 or 80 miles per hour, most tires would last less than an hour. He also needed a reliable engine that would run all day at 75 miles per hour. He found the right combination and in 1911 won the first Indianapolis 500. There have been many great drivers who could not find the right winning combination, and one of these drivers was Tony Bettenhausen. He was almost unbeatable on the dirt tracks, but could not find the winning groove at Indianapolis. Tony had this to say about being a race driver.
I feel that certain people are cut out to be carpenters. Another man might be cut out to be an engineer and another one a policeman. Well, I feel racing is my living, and if I was to have racing taken from me, why, I would be losing everything that I had attained through the past 20 years.